Court is back in session.
Go ahead and be seated. Good afternoon. All right, this is our last matter on for the day. Pacific Care versus Griffith. This is docket number 53789. Counsel, are you ready?
We are, Your Honor.
All right. Would you like to reserve any time?
Yes, Your Honor, I would, if I could, 5 minutes, please.
All right.
May it please the court, my name is Larry Scarborough, and together with Connie Ackridge, we represent Pacific Air and related entities. Having reserved my time for rebuttal, I'd like to move directly to the question that was posed in the notice scheduling this argument, which is whether Nevada's unconscionability defense can survive the preemptive sweep of the Medicare Act. The answer most directly is it cannot. It is preempted. To begin with, the district court correctly held that the Medicare Act's preemption provision applied and removed from consideration statutory rules such as appear in 689B.067 relating to certain opt-out rights that Nevada residents might otherwise have. As the court knows, for her part, Ms. Griffiths is not challenging that aspect of the ruling. So what's left for consideration is the frontal assault on the validity of the contract documents by virtue of the unconscionability doctrine. And as to that critical issue, we submit the correct analysis proceeds as follows. We all know that in 2003, there was a new preemption statute put into the Medicare Act. The legislative history and rulemaking that accompanied that change, which affected the scope and sweep, affected a reversal in presumptions, and I'm quoting now, such that state laws are presumed to be preempted unless they fall into two specified categories, licensing or solvency, neither of which relate to the issues that confront us today. The reason, the legislative history says, for such broad preemption authority is that Congress intended that the MA program, Medicare Advantage, as a federal program, operate under federal rules. Those citations appear at pages 10 and 11 of our opening brief. In the final rulemaking, the legislative history explicitly stated that that preemptive force extends to the common law. Quoting again, all state standards, including those established through case law, are preempted to the extent that they specifically would regulate MA plans. That's the Joint Appendix, page 118. Case law confirms that result. We've cited to the court the recent California Court of Appeal opinion in Yarrick, and the court there held, quoting again, if state common law judgments were permitted to impose damages on the basis of these federally approved contracts and quality assurance programs, the federal authorities would lose control of the regulatory authority that is at the very core of Medicare generally and the MA program specifically. Now, plaintiffs criticized the citation of that case based on its reference to quality assurance plans, and there isn't any doubt those are at the core of the merits of the underlying claims that are brought against the insurers arising out of the endoscopy center events. But the reason we cited it to this court is for its emphasis on the contract documents. Because the contract documents are approved by the Medicare authorities, that extends to subscriber agreements, paren evidence of coverage terms, that's in the regulations. Those are deemed to be marketing materials, those are also in the regulations. That includes the arbitration provision that brings us here today. All of that is approved by the Medicare authorities, and consequently, any attempt by virtue of an unconscionability doctrine or otherwise to end up with different documents potentially viable in different states works a conflict that cannot survive preemption analysis. Now, because the preemption statute that we have says it extends to any, I emphasize any, state law and regulation, it's different, we contend, than a statute that says a state law or regulation. And let's say that that a state law or regulation statute also had a savings provision that preserved common law claims. This case is not that. Those are the facts of Spriezma versus Mercury Marine. And in that case, upon which plaintiffs rely, the Supreme Court of the United States went out of its way to say that the word a in front of statute or regulation has a certain discreteness. We submit that the word any offers no such discreteness, but rather is encompassing. Now, I just explained that these regulations under the Medicare Act, after all, we are talking about a federal benefit here, that those evidence of coverage documents, the marketing materials, the subscriber agreements, all are subject to the approval and are approved by the Medicare authorities. Don't have to take my word for that. The agency charged with administering the plan, CMS, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, agrees. That's why we provided the amicus brief in the case that's before the Ninth Circuit to the court. I would not suggest that that has precedential value, but it is the agency's view that even common law claims are preempted under the reformulation of the preemption provision in the Medicare Act. So based on the statute, the legislative history, recent case law, the agency charged with administering these programs, preemption, we submit, is the only result here. The unconscionability doctrine does not apply, and this case should be sent back with directions to have the parties arbitrate their claims as they agreed in boldface letters and all capital letters that they
did. But did they really? There's no evidence of coverage for 06, 07, and 08. Where in the agreements? I mean, I looked through these contracts. Where in here does it say that the 06, 07, and 08 contracts incorporate the 2005 evidence of coverage?
Oh, Your Honor, we've cited that in the briefs. When I sit down, I'll find the page. But the enrollment form, which is the evidence of coverage in that original document, is referred to in every single set of documents.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I will get the site for you. Let me also say that even though she needed to apply, Ms. Griffiths did, in order to get benefits, that the arbitration provisions themselves are in the pamphlet materials that Your Honor just held up and showed me in 05 and 06, to be sure. You understand, I know.
07 was markedly changed. Where is there notification to her of those significant changes in the document for arbitration?
These are one-year agreements, and that takes us into unconscionability a little bit.
So shouldn't the court remand to have the district court evaluate which of these contracts applies to the plaintiff's complaint first?
Well, as we know, the court didn't decide which of these applied. I think the de novo standard that operates here would permit this court to look at the 2005 application, the first document that has the arbitration provision, look at the pamphlet that accompanied it in 2005, look at the pamphlet that accompanied it in 2006, and conclude as a matter of law that those are the applicable contract documents. There can't be any question that that's the universe of the applicable Medicare documents. Why? Because she was treated in 05 and 06 at the endoscopy centers. And if there is any causal connection to what went on there, forgetting our views as to the merits of the claims and whether they can either be brought, they have to relate to those documents. That is not what the plaintiffs say. The plaintiffs want to show you 2008, where the pamphlet doesn't have, I would agree, an arbitration provision. That enrollment document still applies, and that's the side I'm going to find for the court in answer to the court's question, because let's assume that 2008 was the only year she was a Medicare member. There'd be no coverage. We can apply some standard insurance principles to understand that if she didn't have a Medicare benefit and Medicare coverage, even taking everything plaintiffs say to be true about the nature of their claims in 05 and 06, there'd be no because she had to have been covered and have been a Medicare beneficiary in 05 and 06 when she contends she received the procedures, the causal result of which she contends are responsible for her contraction of hepatitis C.
And clarify for me, if you will, what her affirmative claims are, independent of the arbitration issue. She's alleging that they didn't properly investigate this clinic when they referred her to their services.
Yes, Your Honor. They are based on the quality assurance regulations in 695 C and G. They are, to shorten this a bit, just like the claims brought in Yerrick, where the contention is that if Pacific Care had exercised the care that it should have under the quality assurance regulations, it surely would not have continued to retain the endoscopy center without corrective action as a provider, as part of the network that it was utilizing.
So the act, the omission, and any contract claim or implied covenant claim would relate to acts or omissions that occurred in 2005 and 2006?
Absolutely correct.
And none in 2007 or 2008?
It would have been impossible for us, if we were behaving appropriately in 2005 and 2006, to have been the causal connection. My understanding from plaintiff's claims is they read the preliminary report of the health district, which has now been finalized, which has a recitation that these procedures, whatever they were, might reach back as many as 4 years and reach them back to put Ms. Griffiths within the ambit of, again, I'm stating plaintiff's claims as I understand them, within the ambit of what they say that Pacific Air did wrong in 05 and 06 by not ferreting out these alleged practices in accordance with the obligations under the quality assurance regulations.
Well, under 05 and 06, if the challenge relates to the quality of care, that seems to set up a grievance procedure under the definitions, which is independent of arbitrations.
Both things are correct. What should have happened here, remember our motion to dismiss.
Wait, before you change, I'd like to complete the point.
Yes.
Restate it if I didn't clearly. Is there a difference in the contracts between 05 and 06, arbitration and grievance?
Well, there are references to arbitration and grievance, but all the claims that could be brought regarding the quality of care are within the scope, and there's been no argument to the contrary all through these proceedings, of that arbitration provision, whether it's in the enrollment form, the 05 pamphlet, or the 06 pamphlet.
Any other questions? All right, you've got actually 2.5 minutes left. We peppered you with questions pretty good, so I'm going to give you another 2 minutes.
Thank you.
So, yeah, total of 4.28.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Rick Friedman. I represent Mrs. Griffith in this case. I would like to start with issues that both sides agree on. And actually, before I do that, I'd like to ask, would it be okay if Mr. Sharp were to sit up here so that he can operate?
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you. Both sides agree that each year, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, a separate contract was in place between the parties. Each side agrees that the starting point for any analysis this court needs to do needs to start by first deciding which contract applies to this dispute. Is it the 2005, the 2008, or something else? Both sides agree that this is a question of Nevada contract law, not a question of federal law, in terms of which contract applies to this dispute. It also cannot be disputed that the contracts at issue here are contracts of adhesion. Mrs. Griffith had no meaningful opportunity to negotiate other terms. The terms were just sent to her each year.
Well, now let me ask you this. Let me stop you right there.
Okay.
There wasn't anything I really saw in the record that would indicate to me that she didn't have the ability to go through and line out provisions which she disagreed with or wanted to change. Is that just a, it seems like a very general statement.
Well, here's the situation. The motion for arbitration, to compel arbitration, was done before there was any discovery conducted. And so as a result, what we know in the record is that each year, well, in the first year, she signed the election form, and then after that, the explanation of coverage was sent to her. So we know that that came after the original election form. And then we know each year this document was sent to her. And you're right. Beyond that, we know nothing else except our own common sense, which is these documents were mailed to her each year, and there's no indication that there was any ability to negotiate in any way. We also know that under Nevada law, whether it's a contract of adhesion or not, any ambiguity needs to be construed against the drafter of the contract. We know that PacifiCare made a decision each year to change the contract because each year it sent her a new contract. It didn't necessarily have to do that, but that's what it elected to do, to change the contract each year. And each year it told Mrs. Griffith that the contract lasted only for a year and that the new documents it was sending her replaced or substituted for the documents she'd previously received. So if we go to the first slide here, essentially in 2005, what the contract tells her is that her contract consists of evidence of coverage, which is that initial form that she filled out. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. The election form, which is the initial form she filled out, the election of coverage, which is the packet, the longer term, or the longer, the thicker packet that describes the benefits, the schedule of benefits, and any current or future amendments. It also told her, these documents will be mailed to you annually and will replace all prior evidence of coverage and disclosure documents and schedule of benefits. So she's told each year, it only lasts a year, and each year she's told this set of documents replaces the old set of documents, year after year. And by the time we get to 2008, what she's told is that her contract consists of the evidence of coverage, schedule of benefits, enrollment application form, and any current or future amendments. She never signed an enrollment application form. So by 2008, what she's been told by PacifiCare is, here's your contract, evidence of coverage, schedule of benefits, and any current or future amendments. That's what she's told. It's undisputed. There is no arbitration clause in any of those documents in any way, shape, or form. Now, PacifiCare could have decided to do something different, but it didn't. This is the way it decided to set up the situation with its insured. Each year it told her, these documents replace your old documents. This is classic restatement of contracts, substitution of contract law. When you substitute one contract for a prior contract, the prior contract doesn't exist anymore in terms of duties of the parties. So they were sailing under the 2008 contract when this dispute arose. No dispute about that. And again, by the plain words that PacifiCare drafted, there was no arbitration clause in the contract in 2008. What's this course of dealings tell us about the intent of the parties? I would suggest to the court is if you want to look beyond the plain language of the contract, this course of dealing clearly evidences a desire to take arbitration out of the contract in 2008. Now, I don't know why they did it. I don't know what their thinking was. We've got no record on that. But that was a choice PacifiCare made unilaterally without consulting Mrs. Griffiths. PacifiCare says in its brief that the election form is essentially the same as the enrollment application. And to support that argument, they point to the fact that the terms are defined similarly in the 2000 2008 evidence of coverage and the 2005 evidence of coverage. But the fact is those forms are different. They're titled differently. There's no reason to, and we don't have any record on what an enrollment form looks like or what an election form looks like. But what we do know is that they used a different term, they used a different form, and they're not suggesting, and I don't think they've ever, they may have suggested, but they've never said in their brief, and they can't say to you, these forms are identical.
Well, isn't the election form Joint Appendix 106 and 105?
That I'm sure it is if you're looking at...
You said we don't know what an election form looks like.
What I meant to say, Your Honor, is
you're saying for 2006, 7, and 8, we don't know what an election form looks like.
Or an enrollment form. Because, of course, enrollment form is the language they're using in 2008.
Do we know what an enrollment form looks like for 2005? Is
no,
that in there?
I don't think there, as far as I know, there wasn't such a thing. But no, I've not seen anything in the record that tells us what an enrollment form looks like in 2005. Now,
are you suing on the 2008 contract?
We've got a tort claim. We don't have a contract claim. And our tort claim is that, just briefly, you sent us to this doctor or this clinic. It was the only choice we had. We weren't allowed to go anywhere else, and you didn't use the slightest care to ensure that this clinic was a safe and reputable place. That's our tort claim.
Isn't that a grievance, as that term is defined, even under the 2008 contract?
I don't think it is, Your Honor. I think the grievance procedure is designed to deal with issues of denial of benefits. Like I say, I want to go in and have a radiation treatment, and they say, no, you can't have radiation treatment. The grievance procedure is designed to deal with benefit determinations, not personal injuries that are inflicted as a result of somebody's negligence.
But you've also alleged breach of an implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing, which we usually see in terms of contract.
And that claim is in our underlying case. There's no question about that. But the major thrust of our case is a negligence case for failing to assure quality at this clinic, for failing to do anything to assure quality at this clinic.
Well, at Joint Appendix 464 in the 2008 contract, grievance is defined as the type of complaint you make if you have a complaint or a problem that does not involve payment or provision of services by us. For example, you would file a grievance if you have a problem with things such as the quality of your care, general dissatisfaction with the way ARP Medicare Complete Benefits are designed, waiting times for appointments, the way your doctors or others behave, not being able to reach someone by phone, and so forth. Isn't the nature of your claim a grievance?
It could be a grievance, Your Honor, but I don't think there's anything in the contract that says you have to file a grievance if you have one.
Well, that's a separate question,
right?
But it certainly... That got back to my earlier question.
You were right, yeah, absolutely.
Is this an arbitration or is this a grievance? Are they different things? And if it's a grievance, does it require arbitration at all?
The defense has never contended that this is a grievance, and neither have we. The defense has taken the position that we're required to go to arbitration based on the 2005 contract.
And you've never argued that this is in the nature of a grievance and therefore arbitration doesn't apply.
That's right. We've never argued that.
Okay.
Our position.
But the duty and its breach that you're asserting are tied to the 2005 and 2006 contracts, correct?
I don't think they are, Your Honor. I understand the point that your question appears to be making, which is, if the incident happened in 2000 or 2006, in other words, she was exposed to hepatitis C in those years, then we ought to look back to 2005 or 2006 to what the contract was at that time.
Actually, in a slightly different point, which is you're asserting that their client breached a duty of due care to your client.
In 05 and 06.
Right.
Correct.
Because that their client owed a duty of due care with respect to who they sent your client to, and that person allegedly delivered negligent or worse services. So the duty and its breach that you're suing on both occurred with reference to the 2005 and 2006 contract. That's the problem I'm having with your claim that 08 should govern, particularly since you started out by saying each year is a separate contract.
Well, let me give you a hypothetical, Your Honor, to illustrate. I think the bottom line is this mess that Pacific Air created with these various clauses and so on can be interpreted a variety of ways. But remember, we're not dealing with when did a cause of action accrue, but when did a dispute arise? Because the language of the arbitration clause is phrased in terms of any dispute. Well, there was no dispute in 2005. There was no dispute in 2006.
What if she hadn't renewed in 07 and 08? Are you saying she would no longer have a claim?
If she had not renewed in 2007 or 2008, she would have a claim, and it wouldn't be arbitrable. They could have drafted this clause to say, you have to arbitrate any claim that comes from care that's been given in 2005, 2006, but they didn't draft it that way. It's drafted in terms of any disputes, and there were no disputes in 2005, 2006, but you've put your finger on the awkwardness, frankly, of our position on that. There's a flip side to their position on that. If you take, Matt, could we go back to the first slide? If you take the 2000, if instead of being treated in 05 and 06, she had been treated in 06 and 07, then what would happen? And maybe Mr. Scarborough can answer this for you, because if she'd been treated in 06 and 07, those arbitration clauses are dramatically different, dramatically, and our brief outlines the differences. So which arbitration clause is the court to apply? The 2006 that has a whole panoply of provisions, or the 2007 that has a whole different panoply of provisions? Which is, and that's not just a far-out hypothetical, it's very likely that some of the patients at Pacific Care are in exactly that position.
But this plaintiff is in the 0506.
That's right, but any rule you announce about how to interpret this contract is going to have far-reaching consequences. And my suggestion to the court is that the bright line rule ought to be that Pacific Care has to live with the language that it drafted, which is if the dispute arises in a particular year, that's what governs that year. That there is awkwardness, there is ambiguity, there is practical problems such as the one I just pointed out, or such as you just pointed out on our side, no question about it. There are also
Finish your thought.
There are also problems with interpretation. And the truth is that this clause and this set of clauses are susceptible to a variety of reasonable interpretations and meanings. And in that context, Mrs. Griffith gets the tie. That's the law in Nevada. It has been, at any rate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Instead of what-ifs and conjectures, let me return to the question that was put to me where I promised I would get some citations so we can straighten out some of the nomenclature. The Joint Appendix 105-106 is the initial arbitration provision. It's called an individual election form, as the court pointed out. In the document that comes later on page, the pamphlet that deals with 05, on page 228, this is Joint Appendix 228, it states to the Medicare individual that the enrollment form is also referred to as the election form. So it's made clear that those two things are synonymous. Next, on page 217, and this comes back to the particular question that was asked, this is the 05 pamphlet that followed her acceptance as a beneficiary in the 05 enrollment form. She must have been accepted or we wouldn't be here. It talks about what constitutes the contract documents, and it says, first paragraph, your member contract for the Secure Horizons Medicare Advantage Plan consists of the evidence of coverage and disclosure information, the schedule of benefits, your election form. And while I didn't find the sites in each of the subsequent 4 years, it clearly takes in the election form. I went to the outermost hypothetical, which is, let's assume if 08 applies, and on joint appendix page 458, there it is again, your enrollment application form, which this insured has been told is the same as the election form. So the position to resolve all the hypotheticals is if the only language had been in this enrollment form in 05, and then the next thing one saw was everything that's in 08, it would still be the correct contract construction, given that the injury was sustained in 05 and 06, for this initial arbitration provision to apply. Now, the final thing I want to say, I have two final things. One is, and I don't want to sound too defensive about this because I've been thinking about the question on grievance. The posture that this issue comes to the court in is as follows. Our first move, and I can be criticized for this, right, wrong, or indifferent, our first move was to move to dismiss the entire complaint on Medicare preemption grounds. Shouldn't be a claim under the way that they've articulated it in their complaint. Motion denied. The next step, which we advised in our motion to dismiss papers, was, well, now we need to talk about forum. And if there's a forum, judicial or arbitrable, it has to be arbitrable based on the argument just made. I had not yet looked at the arbitration of claims, let's say, versus grievance. I mistook the court's question earlier. It is possible, depending upon how they articulate their claims ultimately, for this to be a claim for money damages based on the quality assurance regulations, which is what we've proceeded under. Whether that does or doesn't fit within the ambit of grievance, I hadn't thought about until just today, so I don't have a good and complete answer for the court about that, but I do know that as between litigation and arbitration, this matter, because of the nature of the documents, must be arbitrated. And of course, that's after and only if this court decides that Medicare preemption does not apply to unconscionability.
Counsel, I have one more question about the contract documents. For example, in the 2008 agreement, Joint Appendix 463, the effective date of the contract begins when you receive written notification of your effective date from us. Is there such a document?
There is not. The do the best I can based on the record that's here. The one-year issue, and of course, if we're only talking about 08, it does walk them right into the notion of they don't have anything covering 05 and 06. But Medicare only contracts with us being PacifiCare, 1 year at a time. So if we want to keep documents for the insured at all uniform, at all consistent, as the documents change, as Medicare approves them, then we've got to say, as we did in 08, that arbitration provision, we didn't say it that specifically, but that the provisions of that election form, that enrollment application, continue to apply. And they do. And in 05 and 06, and then I will sit down, the court below found that all those provisions in the pamphlet and in the provision were, in the court's words, reasonable for residents of Southern Nevada. That in itself has not been challenged here either. Thank you very much for your time.
Counsel, thank you for your great briefs and good arguments, and this matter will stand submitted. You may have noticed Justice Cherry and Justice Sata aren't with us today. Justice Sata was unavoidably delayed in Las Vegas, and Justice Cherry is recovering from a successful hip surgery, and both of them are listening to the webcast. Both will participate in the post-argument call for this matter. So it's for your information. Thank you again. We'll stand in recess until the next call of the court.
All rise.